Hi, Tina.
Hi, Leah. How are you?
I'm doing okay. I did realize that I totally forgot to give us a song for the last episode.
Now that you mention it, yes, we did not talk about a song.
Yeah. I mean, that's kind of the thing now, right? People are out there and they're like, what's the song?
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, the letters we've gotten. So, our last episode was on nausea and vomiting. And the song is by the band X, one of my favorite bands ever. And it's called Nausea.
All right. I'm not familiar with it.
That's okay. It's on our Pinterest page. It's in the little nausea folder.
Oh, perfect.
And I know you were wondering what today's song is.
Yeah, I woke up thinking about it, as a matter of fact.
What the heck is our song going to be? So this is kind of awesome. So it's a song called Bitter Taste, and it's by Billy Idol. And it's a new song, apparently. I don't know exactly what year it was released, but it's a recent song.
It sounds perfect.
And it's not, it's so good. I mean, listen to it again. It's in the folder on the Pinterest page. You might like it.
All right. I definitely will. Oh, okay.
The songs great. The songs for these episodes are a little like rougher, you know, because all the stuff, the side effects, they're rough.
So what I hear you saying is you're not just talking about the lyrics. You're like, you're getting down to the melody has to be right as well.
Oh, it's not necessarily the lyrics either. It's like the title,
just the title.
And, you know, yeah, the feel.
All right.
This has been Leia's American Top 20. I don't know what I'm saying. Tina, what are we talking about today?
What are we talking about today? Today, we're going to talk about mouth sores and taste changes. It's all about the mouth today.
Yep. And they're often intertwined. So it's good that we're covering them both.
Exactly. Yes. They're not always together, but they overlap quite a bit.
Yep. So Tina, like what are these things that happen? Like why do mouth sores and taste changes happen during treatment?
Well, the mouth sores are a side effect that happen with some chemotherapy drugs in particular. And there, again, we know for most chemotherapy drugs, we know their potential for this side effect. So they're listed, right? This is a listed side effect of some drugs out there. And it's mostly due to direct toxicity of the mucosa of the mouth. So it's also called mucositis or stomatitis.
Mm-hmm.
Those are some of the more technical terms for this, but mouth sores is what generally we call them to our patients. And it's a lot of it is due to the rapid division of cells that line the mucosal tissue, right? So the cells lining the mouth and the throat and all the type of cell is called a squamous cell, most of it. And it's rapidly dividing itself. And because a lot of drugs are targeting rapidly dividing cells, it's a side effect. They just get taken out as kind of a collateral damage kind of thing. So that's a large part of it. And then other changes that are happening besides direct damage to the rapidly dividing cells of the oral mucosa is derangements of the microbiota in the mouth. And the lack of saliva sometimes from things like radiation can change the bacteria. The microbiota is basically all the different flora in the mouth, which can change dramatically when there's a difference in the saliva, in the acidity, the alkalinity of the saliva, or even lack of saliva sometimes because of direct effects of the treatment. Those are the big ones. And some of it is also due to just inflammation in general, because these treatments, most of them make you systemically inflamed. And these cytokines that are involved in inflammation can also change how you taste food. And maybe some of that taste changes to keep you away from eating because you're already kind of full. In air quotes, full of the chemical compounds. Your body wants a break from having to digest or process things. And so, some of it's a natural effect of a natural consequence of the systemic treatment.
And then you also get mouth sores if you've had direct radiation to your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And just kind of quickly, the the whole reason for rapidly dividing cells throughout your entire digestive tract is because it's constantly being assaulted, right? Like you eat something and if you get a cut in your mouth, I mean, it's got to heal fast anyways, right? So your whole GI tract is always getting things rubbing up against it. And so there's constantly cell turnover.
Yes. From all the way from mouth to anus, the whole GI tract is rapidly dividing to an extent, right? So that
snout to tail.
Would you call it snout to tail?
I don't know.
Okay. Yeah. Sure. I like that. Stem to stern? I don't know. Anyways, the bad news is that it's rapidly dividing is often part of the collateral damage. The good news is that means that its healing potential is fairly quick too.
So yeah.
As things come back into balance, the healing potential is there to heal more rapidly than slower dividing cells in the body like nerves.
Another cause of mouth sores is when your blood count drops. So when you're neutropenic, oftentimes that a sign of that can be mouth sores.
Mm-hmm.
And these issues are really important because anything that can prevent a patient from eating is a concern. And like a lot of the side effects that we are talking about, we will be talking about, if they get to a certain level, treatment has to stop or be decreased. You know, there might be a stopped could be like a change of treatment, or it could just be like a little hiatus, you know, a little break. But as naturopathic doctors, our role is to kind of keep patients on the course.
Yeah. So that as naturopaths or any integrative practitioner, I would hope when you're doing integrative medicine with cancer care, the whole idea is to keep people on their scheduled treatment plan so that there's no delay in time or reduction in dosage so that they can get the optimal effect from the conventional side while we, you know, hopefully do other integrative medicines that keep people able to do that, because then the limiting side effects of the chemo or the radiation are avoided completely and people can sail through a little more
smoothly.
Smoothly. Yeah. I didn't want to
sail smoothly.
I didn't want to oversell it and say easily because it's not easy.
No, it's more not smoothly. Easy. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So, Leah, you had some chemotherapies that are known to cause mouth sores. Did you have that as an issue during your treatment?
I had maybe like a mild mouth sore or two. What I had was sensitivity of my mouth and tongue. I did a lot of preventive things, starting with ice chips. So during the infusion, because I was getting Adriamycin and Cytoxan, and I would hold ice chips in my mouth, which is hard for me because I don't really like ice. I don't like cold things, and infusion rooms are so cold. And so I used the ice chips. And so that was during the infusion. And that's a cryotherapy is something that is looked at.
Yes.
With different chemos. The only one I would recommend not doing that with would be oxaliplatin, because
for sure
that makes you super sensitive to cold. Another thing I did was salt and baking soda rinses. So sea salt and baking soda rinses.
Mm-hmm.
And what I did, this is my hot tip for the day, my first hot tip of the day, is I took like a quarter cup of sea salt and a quarter cup of baking soda, and I mixed it in a small little mason jar and I shook it up. And then I left that in my bathroom on the counter. And then I would take about 8 ounces of water every morning, put a half teaspoon of that mixture into the water, and just created a solution. And every time I walked into my bathroom, I would swish and spit, swish, gargle, and spit. And I did that I started the day before treatment, and I would continue that. I actually did it like all the way through treatment. And then at one point I kind of was like, I'm not getting mouth sores. I'm going to stop this. And I started getting sensitive mouth, and I was like, oh, shoot. And I resumed it. I just did it all the time. I mean, it was easy. So pre-mixing the salt and baking soda is a super hot tip.
So you pre-mixed the powders.
I premixed the powder
and then put that in the water daily.
Because if you do it individually, it's like a quarter teaspoon of each baking soda and sea salt into 8 ounces of water. And so I just premixed the whole thing and did half teaspoon.
Yes, that's
it
a just, good idea.
It made my morning faster. Sure. Yeah, it was kind of a nice tip. The other thing I did was the glutamine powder.
Okay. The glutamine powder you did as a rinse or you took it systemically?
I did both.
Okay.
During the taxane.
Yes. Okay. Now I'm
during the taxane. Yeah. Yeah. Sorry. I switched, as many people do, from the four cycles of the AC, I switched to the T, and that's when I switched to the glutamine powder.
And the glutamine, there is evidence out there for lowering mouth sores in people who are taking a taxane based drugs when they're taking a larger dose, and a large dose being a big dose, like 30 grams of L-glutamine for 4 days, starting a day after chemo. That's the study I'm aware of that came out quite a long time ago and should be repeated more, but it did come out, gosh, it's gotta be 20 years ago now that evidence first hit about high dose L-glutamine for a very short period of time, right after doing a taxane based drugs, lowering both mouth sores as well as muscle aches and pains and joint aches and pains. And
I didn't find it helpful for that part, as I'm sure we will eventually cover on my taxane adventure, but I did do it. I did it just for those 4 days. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I did it exactly like that study.
And as
I didn't take it the whole period of time.
Because mm-hmm. on a side note, L-glutamine could be useful for that. And it doesn't seem to interfere with the treatment at all. But we do have some concerns about a lot of glutamine going in because for some cancers, many cancers actually, glutamine can act as its second favorite fuel right behind glucose.
So, but like both of those, you can't really eliminate from your diet. The glutamine, you can just decrease it. So in cases like that, I just have patients rinse and spit.
Mm-hmm. Yes. My cautionary is because, you know, we live in America where more is better. And if a little bit is good, a lot of it's gotta be great. I don't want people to take large doses of L-glutamine thinking that they're doing themselves good, because there could be a point where too much L-glutamine is not a good thing.
Right.
So that I just want to also say that, you know, a lot of what we talk about, we're looking at what came out of clinical trials, and granted they're small trials. A lot of the time they might even be out of another country like Europe or something, but that is a evidence-based, or I should say evidence-influenced.
Mm.
Because evidence-based is a bar that a lot of natural agents don't reach. So you can't say it's evidence-based, but it is evidence-influenced decision. And anyways, I digress.
So there are other things that we look at with mouth sores. One of the things I found was that I had patients who wore dentures, and with weight gain or weight loss with treatment, their dentures didn't fit properly.
Mm-hmm.
And so again, this is a preventive measure by letting your patient know that if you start to get mouth sores, you know, look at your dentures.
Yeah, that's actually a good one.
Thanks. What are other things that we can do preventively?
So honey has some evidence behind it. There is decent information on honey, and I actually have, I have a bank of papers on this kind of stuff. But I believe I have some papers on how honey has been used for mouth sores. And I like to have people do slippery elm,
Nice.
Slippery elm is just that. It's very mucilaginous in itself.
Which means like gooey. Think of like okra.
Yeah.
Gooey.
Mucilaginous. It's
snotty.
It's kind of mucusy, really.
It's mucusy, yeah.
That sounds inviting.
Oh, that sounds so appealing.
Take it by the spoonful.
I like the taste of it. No, I like it. It's a powder, but I like the taste of it. I find the taste comforting.
The taste tastes a little bit like maple syrup.
Yeah, it kind of does. Mm-hmm. And I don't like maple syrup that much. Mm-hmm. So interesting.
Yeah. And so it's very easy to take slippery elm powder in a bowl. I mean, you can buy slippery elm lozenges, don't get me wrong, but sometimes I have people just put it in a bowl and maybe add a little bit of honey to that, and then a little bit of water, and make it into like Play-Doh like consistency, and just roll the little balls, and then you can air dry them on some wax paper or whatever. They will go bad. So you can't make more than a couple weeks worth at a time,
Can you refrigerate them?
You can refrigerate them and stretch that out. They get a little chewy. They don't, they're not so dry in the fridge, but that's okay. And I tend to have people make a little ball and then in the palm of their hand, just put their finger on it, like to make it flat, because strange as it sounds, it just fits in your mouth better as a flattened circle than it does in a sphere.
Okay.
I know. It's just for comfort when you go to put it in your mouth later once it's dry. Plus it dries a little easier as a disc.
Oh yeah, probably. Yeah, totally. I see that.
Yeah. Anywho. So slippery elm honey. And I do think that part of what you did in alkalizing the mouth was really, really important, because I think a lot of what goes on to make it vulnerable, the mouth vulnerable, it has to do with acidity in the mouth. On that same note, probiotics can be useful. And there are specific, you know, oral lozenges that you can use over the counter that are specific probiotics that are good for the mouth. And that means it's good for all of the oral health.
Oh, and speaking of oral health, I mean, good oral hygiene is probably at the top of the list. So, you know, making sure that you floss and just being careful if you have been told that you have low platelets or if you notice a lot of bleeding, just to be really cautious. Using a soft toothbrush when you do brush your teeth.
I actually have people go out and get a toothbrush made for babies.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Because nice. Sometimes even the soft ones for adults are not that soft.
Yeah. What I liked was I used, Trader Joe's used to carry like a myrrh toothpaste and they don't carry it anymore. And it's kind of sad, but I'm sure you could find it somewhere, but myrrh is really healing to the mouth.
Yeah.
I later found out. And then neem toothpaste is also really good. So those are kind of, there could be like, if you do experience the mouth sores, using those might be more soothing than using like a cinnamon or a mint toothpaste. Being careful about, oftentimes sodium lauryl sulfate can be irritating. And so finding, there are a lot of toothpastes out there now, it's a lot easier to find things that are SLS free. And so just kind of taking that out. I do recommend that trying to use a toothpaste with fluoride just because of the issues with dental health and treatment, whether it's chemo or radiation. And when I say chemo, I'm including everything. I'm including immunotherapy, I'm including targeted agents. Like I just use the word chemo as like a blanket just for everyone out there. So they're like, why isn't she talking about, you know, targeted agents? Well, I am. I'm just lumping it.
You're using chemo in the true, like literal sense of the word.
Right. Right.
Cancer treatments. Yes.
Yeah. So I'm trying to think what else. Like the integrative stuff. Well, I guess, you know, oral hygiene is kind of across the board, huh? Oh, I know what else. I have recommended green tea and other tea swishes.
Yeah.
Like calendula tea and chamomile tea.
I really like calendula tea, especially for radiation induced, you know, like,
yeah, I probably wouldn't recommend the green tea for radiation, but I would definitely the calendula tea. You cool, you make a big batch of it, you cool it off, keep it in your fridge, bring it to room temperature and swish with that, gargle with it. I love that.
Yeah. Calendula is actually a well-evidenced plant for radiation damage to the skin and the oral mucosa that it can help reverse that. And I have, yeah, I've used it in any time that there's irritation to the mucous membranes from radiation. So calendula, and it's easy because calendula is more of a nutritive plant. So no matter, it's very, very unlikely to be interfering with any drugs out there. It's really closer to food stuff than it is any kind of drug action. So it's a lovely plant that way.
And the chamomile tea, oftentimes people drink that before bed. And so if you like it, just swish it in your mouth before you swallow it. And maybe that can be helpful. That probably is more on the treating side, but it's still really helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the mouth heals so quickly, some of the preventative stuff is just speeding the healing so you can keep up with the damage from the chemo or whatever treatment, radiation, as it goes along. So in other words, because your body's always trying to repair the tissue. So supporting the reparative processes, even as you're, you know, going back in for treatments that are going to continue the damage, still is a little bit of a, you know, it's a little bit of a treadmill effect, but at the same time, you're keeping it from getting worse and worse and worse.
Oh, I've got another good one. And I actually didn't look up to see if there was evidence, but I had patients who did it and I did it as well. And it is oil swishing.
Oh, what kind of oil?
Oh, I used coconut oil, but it's an Ayurvedic
tradition.
Tradition. Thank you. It's an Ayurvedic tradition. And you probably, I mean, you'd have to get deep into it, into like what your dosha is and all of these things, but you can use either sesame oil or coconut oil. I liked coconut oil because it's just thinner and it's what I had. I didn't think about using the sesame. And I just kind of put a tablespoon of it in my mouth and swished it and swished it and swished it and swished it until it got like really thick and a little foamy. And then I just spit it in the trash. Do not put it in your plumbing. It does not fare well.
No.
But you just spit it into the trash. And I don't know. I mean, my mouth sores were really mild. Who knows what it was due to? I was doing everything.
Mm-hmm.
But I do have patients who have told me that's what they use. And they find it successful.
Would you like me to give you the grading system for mucositis just for to be thorough? When we say mild to moderate, there is a grading system that's used by the medical oncologist that people may find in their notes or find useful.
Sure.
So it's the World Health Organization grading system of oral mucositis. And of course, zero means no changes. There is no mucositis. I don't even know why they bother putting that there, right? So no mucositis is zero. Okay. Grade one is soreness with or without redness in the mouth, better known as erythema. Grade two is redness in the mouth with some ulcers, but the person can still swallow solid food. So that's grade two. Grade three is ulcers with extensive erythema or redness, and people cannot swallow solid food. So by grade three, no longer can swallow solid food, or it's not easy. It's very, very painful, I should say. That's probably grade three. Grade four is mucositis to the extent that you can't swallow anything. It's absolutely impossible because it hurts too much. And, you know, in the case of some people getting treatments like radiation to the head and neck, sometimes they need to have a bypass put in, right? They need to get a tube feeding, a PEG tube into their stomach or a J tube or whatever. So, and there are cases where people, due to their treatment, have a temporary grade 3 to 4 mucositis that precludes eating completely. And that's not to say that I don't want to scare people if they're, you know, pre-treatment, but I find those PEG tubes and bypasses of the mouth are very useful. And I mean, it's a scary concept for a lot of people. And I also have had people refuse to do it, but generally speaking, it's a really useful tool.
Absolutely. And I've had those patients too, who are, you know, they're told that, you know, we have this, that we can, you know, we can provide this for you, and patients flat out refuse it. And I mean, I've seen patients just power through, and it's really, really hard. There's a lot of weight loss. There's a lot of pain. And so then you're trying to manage all of that. And so, yeah, that was another thing, was just trying to convince people that the least route of harm is by actually, you know, having a feeding tube of some sort.
Yeah. Cause then it allows you to at least get proper nutrition.
Sure.
No matter what, which is, you know, high on the to-do list when you're trying to get through treatment and out the other side. And it's a temporary measure.
Oftentimes it's temporary, but do ask your oncologist. Mm-hmm. Always ask your doctor, is this temporary? Is this permanent? Because I've also had patients who thought it was temporary and it was not. And they just didn't hear. Maybe the oncologist mentioned it and they didn't, you know, you hear so much information, you don't remember mm-hmm. it all. So always ask, is this temporary? Is this permanent?
Great point.
So there are pharmaceutical things, if it gets to that point, or oftentimes doctors just write the prescription, like, this is going to cause mouth sores and here's your prescription. Magic mouthwash is the most popular thing that people hear of. Magic mouthwash isn't like one formula. There are several different formulas, and they usually have something like Maalox. They've got some Benadryl in there. They have a numbing agent like lidocaine. Sometimes they have nystatin, which is an antifungal. If I right?
You are correct. Yes.
I'm like, why is it like brain farting on me? So it has nystatin, and then it has one other thing usually. Oh, steroid. So it sometimes has dex, dexamethasone. And you can, yeah, you can get any combo of that, or you can just get Dex by itself. I often saw patients just being told, here's your dexamethasone, and you can use that. And that steroid helps to reduce the inflammation in your mouth. There was a study, and I will have to find it. I'm going to make a little note to find the study and put it in the Pinterest, where they looked at salt water versus magic mouthwash.
Mm-hmm.
And they found salt water was just as effective.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Because magic mouthwash is, I think of it as like some heavy hitting stuff. You know, you have drugs in there that are lidocaine and antifungals. And it's just like, it seems, it's amazing that salt water would be similar.
Yeah, it didn't, in, I don't know how many people they, you know, they looked at, but yeah, it doesn't have all of those different ingredients in it, and it's cheaper.
Well, I think of the term magic mouthwash is a little bit like telling somebody, you know, lasagna. Like, yeah, you know, basically the components, but there's a lot of renditions.
But there's only one that's really good.
That's right. There is one that you like, but anyway.
There are things over the counter too, that I would often recommend to my patients. The big one that most people hear about is biotin.
Mm-hmm.
Biotin kind of is a moisturizer. It used to be in a bunch of different forms, and I don't know what happened. It seemed like I think there used to be like a gum or a lozenge or something.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's back. Who knows? But yeah, it typically came in like a spray, a mouth rinse. There were a bunch of different forms, which made it easier for people to choose which one to use.
Yeah. Biotin would probably, over the counter, is probably the most common thing that I have recommended as well.
Yeah.
What else is there?
And well, I had a patient tell me about a product that we carried at the pharmacy, and it's called Rinsenol, and it's by that brand Gum, G-U-M. They make toothbrushes.
Yeah.
And I believe it has aloe in it. So I just started recommending it. That's how I found out a lot of things to recommend, is when people were like, oh, I found this product and it works. And I'm like, great, I'm going to share it with everyone else.
Right.
Why not?
Aloe contains allantoin. So allantoin is the stuff that helps your cells heal. I mean, that's how we use it on our skin, even like post sunburn, right? So mm-hmm. It does the same on the inside in the mouth as it would do on the skin, which is speed healing.
Nice. Another product we used to use were these B12 melts. I think the brand was Oracote. And they were like little tabs. And if you had a mouth sore, you would just stick it on the, like put the little tab on where the sore was, like if it was in your gum or something. And it worked for some people too.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Was not aware of Oracote.
It's brought to you by the same people that make Xylomelts.
Okay. So it's a xylitol based.
I'm not quite sure what all is in it, but okay. Xylitols are great for dry mouth, which again is keeping that mouth moist. Using Xylomelts is great prevention.
Yeah. Yes, because moisture in the mouth is what helps it heal, right?
So. Yeah. And then like food-wise, there are often things that can help once you have mouth sores, and also preventatively.
Yeah. So maybe the most obvious thing is we started with ice chips. And so on the flip side, you know, when you do something like soup or eat something really hot, if you have a chemical, like a chemotherapeutic in your body that causes mouth sores, especially the day of, maybe the day after chemo, if you eat really hot foods and you bring a lot of blood flow to the mouth, you're delivering the drug more effectively to the mucosa. And so I often tell people or ask people this to lay low on hot foods, hot in temperature, that is, for the day of and the day after. It depends on the drug and when it's active. And then that's true of spicy foods as well. Spicy foods can also draw blood flow, which is also not desirable when you have something in your bloodstream that can cause damage to that given tissue. So those two, that's one thing I always say. And then some other things that might be more obvious, right, is that anything that's going to be abrasive in the mouth. So chips, I don't know.
Tortilla chips. Yeah. I mean, those kind of popcorn, those things scratch your mouth anyway.
Yeah. I was going to say, they're probably not appealing, but favoring soft foods and bland foods and cool foods is probably better.
Yeah. Blended, pureed foods, you know, the mashed potatoes, and, you know, you can add unflavored protein powder to mashed potatoes. If that's all, you know, you're getting in, you can put a little protein in there. There are some things like, people hate, I think they hate us already after our last pod, but caffeine and alcohol also can be aggravating. I don't want to say they hate us. They're just like, oh, really? But yeah, those two things. And then obviously tobacco, because you're bringing hot smoke into your mouth.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Alcohol, unfortunately, is a reliable irritant to mucosa.
Well, just think about it. Like in all those Westerns, you got the cowboys pouring the bottle of hooch into like a gunshot wound, right? I mean, it cleans things out.
Yeah. And burns.
Yeah.
Again, I think that's kind of right next to nachos or something. I don't think people are going to want to do that, right?
Oh, now I want nachos. Thanks a lot, Tina. Oh, you know what? This is actually a perfect segue into the next section that we will be discussing. A sort of hidden, not so hidden cause of mouth sores also can contribute to taste changes, and that's thrush.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I have thrown everything at a patient trying to address their mouth sores, like on the integrative sense. And then, you know, you look in their mouth and it's red and everything. And then you look in their mouth the next time and you're like, oh my God, mm-hmm. you have thrush, which is like just yeast growing in the surface of your mouth, but it doesn't always show up initially. Sometimes it's down in the throat.
Mm-hmm.
And so having that sore throat and things aren't really helping, definitely think thrush, especially because it can also cause altered taste.
Yes, I totally agree. And it doesn't show up clearly at first. Eventually there's a white coating, but at first it just looks really red.
Right.
So it's easy to miss it in the beginning and, you know, go to see the medical oncologist even, or whomever, and they take a look and they don't see the thrush per se. They just think they're looking at mucositis. So, and checking yourself, just looking in the mirror at the back of the throat, in the back of your tongue, that's usually where you're going to see it.
Yeah. And it's not that usual, like, oh, you've got white coating on your tongue. It's not like that. Like you'll see it and you'll be like, oh, that's different.
Mm-hmm.
And that also is related to having neutropenia or, you know, like the low white blood cells. And so just that's another thing to consider. And like I said, I thought that would be a really good segue to taste changes.
Taste changes. Let's talk about it.
All right. So taste changes, there are several different kinds. So there is, I taste absolutely nothing. And that is known as agusia. There is, my taste seems kind of like flat, like a little bland. And that would be hypogusia. And then there's, okay, everything tastes weird, whether it's metal or sour, but like things don't taste like they're supposed to. And that's dysgusia. And we just use the word taste changes.
Or taste derangements. Makes them sound a little more evil. They're deranged.
Oh, totally. Oh no. It's like, that's like a scary scientific movie. I don't know. What am I trying to say? Anyways, that's with a mad scientist in your,
well, yeah. And it can be disturbing, right? It can be really disturbing to not have your normal taste buds, and, you know, because food is pleasurable. It should be pleasurable. And it's just such a bummer to have that change.
Totally. Totally. And things that make you higher risk are like for patients who are getting radiation and chemotherapy for head and neck cancers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, you have that kind of direct assault on the oral mucosa. It happens with different targeted therapies.
Yeah.
And it happens because of, we need a soundboard that says rapidly dividing cells.
Mm-hmm.
So our taste changes happen because taste buds have a turnover, because again, you're eating things and, you know, they get scraped as you take food in. And so that's how we get the taste changes, is because of those taste buds.
And I would say, just from my experience, this is much more common than mouth sores, because it's not just mouth sores. Like there are certain drugs like the taxane drugs that you were exposed to, or like 5-FU, which is commonly causes mouth sores. But when it comes to taste changes, I think almost all of them have that to some extent, or have the potential for taste changes to some extent. The platinums are the classic.
Right.
Right. Cisplatin, carboplatin. And we think that at least some of that is due to zinc deficiency in that case. Right.
Right.
But as far as I know, the it goes, if you look at taste changes, you can see that listed under almost every single, not every single, but most of the chemotherapies come alongside that. And it could be because that is reported, because the other thing that can cause taste changes is co-medications. So some antibiotics can cause it.
Sure.
Right. And there's, you know, other antidepressants can cause it, and some blood pressure meds can cause this. I mean, this is like a
antihistamines. Yeah.
Antihistamines can cause it.
If you have dry mouth, if you have thrush, I mean, there's so many potential things. Yeah.
So
it's kind of being a detective and trying to figure it out, because I had, you know, more than one patient where you're like, why do you still have taste changes? Why? And then you look and you're like, oh, you're taking this medication, and, you know, or even a supplement, you know, or acid reflux. Oh my gosh, we always bring up acid reflux, but it's true. You know, that kind of sour taste in your mouth. Mm-hmm. If someone hadn't ever experienced it before, that definitely plays a part. There often can be a concomitant, not using fancy words. There often can be altered smell too. And that kind of goes hand in hand.
Yes. Yes. As anyone with a stuffy nose can attest, things don't taste so good.
Exactly. Kind of like a fun little fact is the half-life of a taste bud is 8 to 12 days. In some areas of the mouth or the tongue, it's 24 days. And so kind of think of that, like you would often hear of a patient say, like, I started to get my taste buds, my taste back, and then I got another treatment. Yeah. And they went away again. And that's because of the way that the amount of time chemo is spaced apart sometimes coincides with the half-life of a taste bud or the lifespan of a taste bud. So that's always disappointing, because they're like, I started to get my taste buds back and I lost them again.
Yeah.
And, you know, at the end of treatment, it can take up to 6 months, if not longer, for the taste to return just from chemo. Mm-hmm. And for patients who've had radiation directly to their mouth or to their brain, you know, it's like, it may come back. It may not. You just kind of don't know.
Yeah. And as far as those who have radiation directly to the area, so I'm thinking throat cancer and tongue cancers and people who are getting directly damaged from radiation, as much as we can possibly keep the salivary gland and the parotid gland functioning throughout treatment so that there's potential that there's function afterwards, because what we're trying to do in those cases is bring back maybe some damaged glandular tissue. And one thing that I have found, and I know since the last time when we were talking about nausea, something that people tolerate pretty well and I think works to help create some saliva is lemon. Mm-hmm. It stimulates, very gently stimulates the salivary gland and the parotid glands. And what you want, I mean, even if they are damaged 50% or 70% or whatever, because often these people are getting a curative radiation treatment, that means that there's unlikely to be a dose reduction due to side effects, and if they can help it, because they're trying to get every last cell with the radiation. Well, that means collateral damage can be pretty high and it can be pretty permanent for those folks. So if we can keep a semblance of function throughout treatment, then we have something to work with to bring back after treatment. I continue to try to, it can be painful, so you have to be very careful about exercising, in air quotes, the salivary glands.
Exercising with lemon.
Yeah. Exercising.
And it's not direct lemon. I mean, are you talking more like lemon water, lemon lozenges, kinds of things?
No. Not like a direct slice or anything like that, but just the flavor of it. And sometimes even the zest. You know, if just a small amount of lemon. It doesn't have to be the acidic aspect, because acids can be a huge turnoff, but a little lemon zest can do it. Once people are kind of plateaued post-treatment and they've had head and neck or any kind of radiation to the head and neck, and they've plateaued, they're a good 3, 4, even 6 months out from treatment, I will then have people add, assuming that everything is going well and I'll do some checks to make sure that this is safe to do. But there is a plant that's a sialagogue. So there's a class of compound of plants called sialagogues, and they cause your salivary glands and parotid glands to be stimulated and produce saliva. The most reliable one and the most effective one as far as cost effectiveness goes is prickly ash.
Oh,
prickly ash is a plant that we don't have here in the Northwest. It grows mostly in the East and specifically the Southeast, especially. But prickly ash is very strong. So you have to be very careful. I have people take one drop of prickly ash tincture and put it in, like, I'll start them with 4 ounces of water and see how that goes. That's how little, like one drop in 4 ounces of water, and then have them go down from there and see, you can feel the stimulation because you salivate. And so to their comfort level, I'll have them reduce the water with that one drop and go down to 3 ounces. And usually they get down to about a shot glass. And that's all you need, one drop in a shot glass.
So the one drop, but then you're lessening the water concentration.
Yes. So you're getting a little bit more stronger effect in the mouth. So it's a dilution, right? So I'm just less dilute.
Right.
What you never want to do is take that prickly ash and put it directly in your mouth. Cause even if you have never had radiation, you could do that. It doesn't feel great. I've done it. I've experimented with a lot of herbs in the office and done a lot of dumb things like that. Sure.
I think we all did in school. Oh, what does that taste like? Direct in your mouth. Not wise. No. You did mention something in the nausea episode about changing your stainless steel utensils to plastic or something that is non-stainless steel, because the metallic of the utensil can definitely influence how things taste. And sometimes that's all somebody needs.
Yeah. And this, especially if it's a metallic taste itself, the utensils make it more intense. So yeah, just changing over to plastic utensils. And being naturopaths, we want them to be compostable, good.
Made of corn.
You can throw in the compost pile.
Who knows? And adding on to the lemon is I often recommend patients just to keep a little bit of like lemon water or have a lemon lozenge before they eat. So if you kind of suck on a lemon lozenge and then take it out of your mouth, put it on the side of your plate and then eat a little bit and then reuse, you know, keep sucking on the lemon lozenge to kind of stimulate those salivary glands.
Yep.
Or sipping on the lemon water if that's something. And lemon water, like flavoring water, oftentimes helps because water itself starts to taste metallic, or, you know, you start picking up the flavors if the water has any chemicals in it naturally. And so having infused waters that you can easily do yourself using cucumbers or, you know, other fruits, different herbs, you know, you can use basil or something. There are a lot of resources online, and I'm making a note about a water resource website or something for like different recipes and different ideas, and just kind of experimenting and seeing if that makes water more palatable. Because, you know, you often do hear about the patient who is like, I just don't want to drink any water because it tastes gross. Mm-hmm. And then different brands of water for people who do buy bottled water, have found that there are, you know, they all taste differently. And so finding a brand, I would drink Smart Water because I was living in Phoenix and we would get, what's that water called? Reverse osmosis water. It was like, whatever. it didn't appeal to me, but I did find that Smart Water. I am not Jennifer Aniston. I am not, you know,
oh man, you're buy not. It.
No, I'm not. But Smart Water was what helped with me. So
if we're sharing brands that we like, I am not a huge fan of drinking water. I really don't like the taste of like 9 out of 10 waters.
Right.
So for me to like and actually like the taste of a water is not easy. But one of the few waters I do find palatable is Earth 2O.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I have my little column of like Tina tips.
Oh, so on that note, to whatever extent, because we talked about radiation and I talk about saliva, and I know we're not talking about dry mouth and that right now, but I will say that there are times when even water can be painful in the mouth, right? If the mouth sores are bad enough. And rice milk for whatever reason, rice milk, or you take some rice and you boil it and you make rice water. There's something in the rice that's mucilaginous and it smooths it out and takes away that little bit of friction that water has in the mouth. So you can buy the rice milk, you know, in a carton, or you can just boil some rice. White rice is fine in some water, pour the water off, strain it, do whatever you need to do, get the little bit of scum off the top from the rice, and then drink that cool or warm or whatever you want to do. But just so you know, this is something that patient brought to me. They were like, the only thing I can drink, because I couldn't drink water because it hurt too much,
it was rice milk.
Rice milk.
Or rice water.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So I've also heard that a milk made from oat groats can be helpful too. And that actually might help with someone who has thrush.
Yeah.
I'm going to look at those studies too.
Similar reason, right? Because oats are soothing.
Yeah. And mucilaginous.
Yep. Avena sativa.
And while we're talking about, different things to alter what we're drinking, there is a really good resource from a dietitian. Her name is Rebecca Katz.
Mm-hmm.
And I love her. I had her book before I was ever diagnosed, The Cancer Fighting Kitchen. Mm-hmm. I absolutely love her. And she has this system and it's called FASS, F-A-S-S. And that stands for fat, acid, salt, and sugar. And I've already posted this to Pinterest. And it's a diagram that kind of helps you see it. So if food tastes too sweet, you add something acidic. If food tastes really flat, you add something acidic, or you can add something sweet, like maple syrup or honey. If something is really sour, you counter that with something sweet. If something is spicy, you can use sweet or like some sort of a fat. If it's really bland, then you can use salt or acid. And if it's metallic, you can add something sweet. You can add lemon, you know, a little acid. And you can also use like a fat, like a nut butter or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I would just print that out and I would hand it to my patients and say, like preventively, like, okay, if they express concern about taste changes, or if they were told they make taste changes, then I would just say, here you go, here's your handout, and just put that on the fridge in case it happens.
Yeah. I, that Cancer Fighting Kitchen is a great book, even for people who do cook, because I don't know if you know its provenance, but Rebecca Katz wrote a book called One Bite at a Time. And the purpose was to help people going through treatment to eat well. She was in the Bay Area. Maybe she still is. I don't know where she is. But she wrote One Bite at a Time. And then she went back to the drawing board. And what she did was she actually got feedback on her recipes and honed them so that they were better. So I love the fact that she did this book and then she tested it with people going through treatment, got feedback on it, and then came out with the Cancer Fighting Kitchen, which the first section of kind of does that. It lays out all of the kind of cooking rules. So even if you are a cook, her broth recipe is great in there. And anyways, I can't say enough about her, because I think she's done a huge service to help people help their loved ones. Because the person going through treatment, the other thing we should mention is that it's a moving target, right? Taste changes, they fluctuate, and how people perceive their food fluctuates. And so the caregivers I have found in my office when I'm, you know, seeing a patient, I always think, well, I'm not just seeing the patient, I'm seeing them and their caregiver. I'm trying to help them both, because whoever's caring for the patient, hopefully they're with them at that time, but whoever it is can get frustrated sometimes by this stuff, because they make, you know, whatever used to be a favorite meal or whatever, and they're not frustrated at the person. They're frustrated at their lack of help, being able to help them ultimately. So the Cancer Fighting Kitchen is really useful for those folks, right? To have a kind of a guidebook that can help them help their loved one.
For sure. And it can be a really disconcerting side effect, because many of us do love food and we get a lot of pleasure from food. What was kind of funny, I thought it was funny, was when I experienced taste changes, instead of being like averse to food, I went through my fridge and I tasted everything to see, like, can I taste this? Hey, what about this? You know, can I taste pineapple? Can I taste, you know, turkey? Like, I literally went through all of our food. And what's funny is we went to a party and they had a big like spread. It was like this kind of like fancy party with a big spread. And there I am, just taking a little bit of everything. Like, can I taste this? Yeah. So I was the opposite of most people. I just went and I was like, I'm going to try everything and see what I actually taste.
Well, because you were looking at it from a clinical perspective, you're like, this is what it's like.
Oh, that's how every single side effect I experienced was exactly that. It was like a final exam. I joked that it was my board exam. You know, I was just taking one for the team. But yeah, it was fascinating. It was really absolutely fascinating. And I wish I kept a diary of everything that I could taste because I don't remember, but it wasn't very much. And then I used zinc, which we have not yet really delved into, but I would use zinc at that time to kind of bring my taste back. And then eventually it kind of balanced out.
Post-treatment?
No. I mean,
during treatment.
I think, yeah, during treatment. Mm-hmm.
Good.
So let's talk about zinc.
So zinc is a simple thing to do to make sure that you're not deficient in it. So it's not that zinc brings back your taste buds, you know, magically, but it's a zinc deficiency is really common. And if you're not eating well because you have taste changes or even mouth sores or any other reason, making sure you have adequate zinc is kind of the easiest thing to do out of the gates, with the caveat that zinc has to be taken with food because zinc can be nauseating all by itself.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I used a zinc product. I don't know if it still exists. It is from Whole Foods. It's their 365 brand. And it helped that it was lemon flavored. So it was a lemon zinc lozenge. And it was like a little flat powdery lozenge, not like the slick ones that you get, like, you know, Coldies or anything. And that's what I used. So there was a little bit of lemon, a little bit of zinc. And I found that to be really helpful.
You know, some of the studies, I'm always surprised when they use a form that we would never use. Some of them did use zinc sulfate, which is not a form I would use, but
yeah. And oftentimes integrative providers recommend zinc picolinate, but I don't think there's any information behind using zinc picolinate. So yeah. So then that's kind of the thing I think most people think of when they think of taste change support.
Yeah. And the other is the glutamine that you got for your mouth sores. You took that to prevent mouth sores, but glutamine has also been used to, prevent or treat taste changes.
Oh, why did I not know that?
I don't think we in our circles talk about it much. It's in the literature that way.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm. I'd have to look at the dose again. I know it's not the high dose you take for, you know, alongside the taxane for prevention of mouth sores and neuropathy, but it's a lesser dose, I believe.
Fascinating.
And I'm trying to think if there's any other self-care strategy, like habits. I think we hit them all. Cool and cold temperatures. Kind of a lot of the things we talk about for mouth sores are also true for taste changes, right?
Yeah. No, that's why it was such a nice little combo for this pod.
Yeah.
For this episode of the pod.
Bland foods, cool foods, all that stuff does help.
Yeah. Keeping the mouth moist, you know, good oral hygiene. And then and being preventive, because with using the salt water rinses, as I was doing, I did that with, I didn't wait until I had a sore mouth. I did that from, like, you know, before day one of my treatment, and kind of did it throughout. So I think, again, as with every single side effect we will mention, it's staying on top of it. Don't let it get out of hand, because then it just seems to spiral and it's really hard to catch up with some of these side effects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Prevention and early treatment is much, much better than waiting till things get really bad or being, you know, and so I kind of, that's part of my intake with patients has always been like to kind of identify in my mind who the stoic ones are so that I can kind of ask them more frequently how things are going, because they're not going to speak up for on their own until it's pretty darn bad.
Right. Right. And ask, for me, it's ask, you know, you ask the same question every time and patients often get sick of that. Why are you asking me the same question every time? Because the one time you don't ask it, it's going to be the time when they're having that, mm-hmm. you know, when they're having that side effect.
And people normalize things quickly, right? Like they lost their taste buds. So they don't bring it up. Well, that happened last month. So you see them in your office. You're like, any new symptoms? No. And then you go down the list and they're like, oh yeah, I can't taste anything, but I haven't tasted anything for like a month. And so,
right.
So there's a little bit of like expecting things to happen and making them normal, even though maybe we might be able to help them avoid that side effect completely or at least lessen it. So I think we have to be mindful of that. And that just in the form of the podcast, that means that people out there like jot down a new symptom. We thankfully as humans get used to things sometimes. So if it's even if it's mild, jot it down while it's mild, don't wait and then bring it up because there might be something you could do.
Definitely. And especially with what we are talking about next, which is bowel changes.
Naturopaths like to talk about bowels.
We like to talk about poo. Mm-hmm. And so any changes that come up, make a little note.
Can I call the song for the next one?
Yeah.
It's a made up song though. Ready?
I'm ready.
Poop. There it is. Poop. There it is. No?
Can I get a recording of that?
That's all I got.
Did you just make that up right now?
No, I sung it to myself before.
I think of the Beavis and Butthead. Diarrhea, cha-cha-cha. I don't know why. Okay. We are past our lunchtime. This has been our episode on mouth sores and taste changes. I'm Dr. Leah Sherman.
And I'm Dr. Tina Kayser.
And this is the Cancer Pod.
Until next time.